CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It is Friday. It is also the start of a brand new month. The month of July is here. It is hard to be as optimistic and chipper as the people are in the comments, though. I mean, look at this Kapamba saying, grand rising, up and early and Adam. New month, it's Friday, good vibes all around. Parallel Parking says, good morning and happy Friday, let's have some fun. Good morning, lovely South African, says Ricebeck. This is the day that the Lord hath made for us to rejoice and be glad in it, despite stage 6 load shedding. And the comments continue like that, like lots of really cool, happy, positive, optimistic people. And I've got to say, I'm really pleased. What can I say? There's nothing better than happy, optimistic people on a morning where you wake up in the dark and you have to get going. I suppose it's the reality for all of us. So there's no point in us being sad and feeling sorry for ourselves. We may as well just get on with it. As usual, on a Friday morning, we're going to be joined by Ben in a little while. He'll be with us probably around 6:30. He wakes up, has a cold shower, goes for a walk around the neighborhood in the dark. That's asking for trouble. But that's how he starts his day. And then he joins us at 6:30. And then we'll be joined later on by Gord Laws, which is bloody fantastic, because I haven't seen Gord for a long while. And it's always good to have him on. He's traveling around Europe at the moment, so we'll no doubt have some lovely stories from Gord as he takes to his beautiful morning. All right, Gareth, you're wearing a kite, says my Michael. I found a hoodie in my cupboard that I've never worn before. I thought it's cheeky, it's garish, it's ugly, it's perfect for the show. So I put it on this morning. I'm going to find the worst clothes in my cupboard to wear on a Friday. I think it's part of my game plan for the upcoming few Fridays. We may as well make winter fun. And, you know, we all have those jerseys and those tops and those hoodies and things that we just don't wear. And this week, I decided, bugger it, I'm going to wear it. So Fridays from now on, I'm going to dress badly. That's the whole plan. So last night, or yesterday rather, my power was out from, I mean, this is so boring, but I've got to tell you because I made a plan. I made it work for me. So from like 2 to 4, it was gone. So I looked around and I was like, okay, I didn't have meetings and things. I got home at like 1:30. So I had half an hour to get ready for load shedding. So I plugged in my laptop and I charged my phone and all the basic things that you have to do, that we all have to do when these things happen. And then I looked at it and I was like, screw that. I'm going to have a nap, which is exactly what I did. Now, not everybody can do that at 2 in the afternoon. I understand. But that's what I did. I didn't have any other appointments. So I got on with that. Woke up basically after an hour and a bit and realized like I only had a couple of minutes left of load shedding. Then I prepared some stuff for supper and I decided, no, I'm not going to cook anything. I'm not going to reward Eskom with any money. So I made a cold supper. I made a salad. By the way, I'm doing this, I suppose you could call it a diet at the moment. And I'm very proud of myself. I've stuck to it absolutely to the letter. I'm going to try. I want to see if I can lose, a couple of kilograms. It's nothing, I'm not holding a gun to my head. I'm not forcing myself to comply with ridiculous, you know, kind of crazy Spartan ideas. And if I get, you know, 3 kgs off, 5 kgs, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Ideally, I'd like to be around somewhere near that mark, 3 to 5 kgs. If I can do that, then I will share the secret of this thing with you. But I'm not going to boast about it until I've done it. And I've been pretty damn disciplined about not eating anything except what's on the list. And it's not great. I mean, like, there are two nights where you basically have ham and a green salad. But like a little bit of ham and a green salad. For lunch, you're meant to have like boiled eggs and a green salad. And for breakfast, you can have only black coffee. And then sometimes on some days, like one slice of dry bread. I think the idea here is to actually shrink the stomach at the same time. But anyway, I'm doing it. I'll let you know how it goes. So it wasn't too difficult to get dressed and get going this morning. But what was difficult was to like figure out which things I want to plug in once I have this solar put in, because I'm going to start small. I'm going to start with stuff I can afford. I'm going to put in a few solar panels and some batteries in the garage, and then obviously build up to becoming completely energy independent. Because like Canton Pillay, as Bakabantu reminded me yesterday, Canton's been on that page for the longest time. Like Canton's got a borehole, so he doesn't rely on the municipality for water. He doesn't rely on the municipality for electricity. He doesn't rely on Eskom for that. He's completely independent. He's off the grid in every way. I mean, that's the ideal, right? Because ultimately, you want to get to a point where you don't, it doesn't matter what they tell you they're doing with load shedding. You could be like, well, I don't care. I'm good. I'll sort myself out. And I'm understanding of the fact, and I'm actually depressed by it. The fact that most South Africans will never be able to be energy independent, will have to pay Eskom. And that's been the case for me for almost all of my adult life so far. But damn them. After all of this, they're not going to get my money long term. I would rather give money I don't even have. I'd rather take out a loan. And a lot of the banks cleverly are doing this right now. I've been investigating. I'd rather take out a loan and give money I don't have to people who will help me get off the grid. And I'm going to do it. God damn it. I'm getting there. So I'm going on a body diet. I'm going on an energy diet. And I'm going to make this happen. Anyway, I did make a fire yesterday in between. And then did some work in the evening, sitting there at the fire with my laptop, making sure that I was up to date with everything. You know, answering emails. I love going into a Friday where I can actually be clear of emails and shit. It's my favorite thing. I've mentioned that before. So I got this email from Hannes that I thought was quite interesting, and I'd start with that because he's also thinking like long-term and thinking big. Hannes says, could you please do a feature on which estates are nice to live in? Estates or areas around Johannesburg and Pretoria which are safe, affordable, and average for average salary people. I might be moving up from Cape Town and want to start looking at options. I lived in Pretoria 9 years ago. And the obvious idea here is, like, I would, and not just because they're a client of ours, but because they're a client of ours, Waterfall Estate have done some really interesting developments inside. You know, they've got like 9 or 10 different kinds of options. And Waterfall has got to be one of the most well-managed places in the world. That's why they've put a podcast together with us. And you can listen to each episode of that, Hannes. I would start there and say, you know what? Have a look at them. Have a look at Staines City, maybe. And then if you are a developer, or you're in the construction business, or you're someone who has recently started building something that you think might be interesting, whether it's an apartment block, or you got to tell us about this, because even though it costs a little bit to advertise these things, how else are people going to know? Especially if you're doing something different, something innovative, something clever. Let us know about it, because we can make a fuss for you. And that's the point of us connecting with the audience every morning, is that we can share amazing things. And like Hannes asking his question, there are probably lots of people listening to us this morning who have lots of really great answers for this. So if you know, Nico says, no place is safe, just less dangerous. Well, that's true. But there are places that have got really smart, innovative, thoughtful, and forward-thinking solutions to problems like security, problems like electricity, problems like water. And you're going to have to find yourself a house or a property or an apartment in one of those places. Remember, the nice thing about Waterfall, and I remember speaking to Willy Foss, who's the manager of the Waterfall Estate. He's the big boss of the whole thing. And he said to me, they have every kind of, you know, level of living, from kind of cheapest stuff right through to the most expensive residential properties in suburban South Africa. So you can look around their options. I would start there, Hannes. That's probably the best advice I could give you. I was looking at Eskom on, or rather load shedding on Twitter. The comments are not good, hey? Like, if I were the government, I would be very, very nervous. And if we had a snap poll tomorrow, if they said to us, you're going to vote tomorrow, I think the ANC might just end up with less than 40%, let alone less than 50%. They could even go lower than that. P- people are so hurtful. It's just unbelievable. Stage six, says Nando's, which is very, very clever. I like that. I mean, you know, this is where Nando's are at their best, is when they're being cheeky and they're throwing the middle finger up at government. Stage six instead of stage six. Even we can't deal. And there are lots of people who are criticizing the ANC, obviously, saying, you all voted, you do not complain. You deserve everything that you're getting. Load shedding stage six, pala pala farm gate. There is a theory going around that people are, you know, if everybody's on strike, there's still someone switching off the power. And that's the person who really should go on strike. But people are saying that it might be a distraction, that there are lots of people who are working hard here to try and distract us from Cyril's pala pala gate. But I don't think that this will help him. If it is a distraction, it's the worst thought out distraction in human history, because all it's doing is making us hate this administration more. You know, in America, they really don't like Joe Biden at the moment. His approval ratings are in the low 30s. And that's even among Democrats. Now, in this country, we don't do approval ratings, but if we did, I think they'd be at an absolute all-time low for the ANC. I don't think that this party's ever been as unpopular as it is now. I don't think this president has ever had to deal with unpopularity, with a lack of popularity like he is now. Cyril is not liked by anyone except the mainstream media, and even they are starting to turn on him. It's got to be like crystal clear to these guys that the time is up. The ANC will stabilize Eskom, provide safe and reliable electricity, and ensure poor households receive the free electricity allocations they're entitled to. That was in 2021, Building Better Communities Together, an ANC manifesto statement about water and electricity. Huh, how's that going? Someone said, dear South Africans, while you're sitting in the dark, unemployed and hungry, and idolizing thieving politicians whose kids spin around in Lamborghinis, think carefully about who you're voting for in 2024. You know, it's just unbelievable. There is so much going on here that is indicative to me of like a quiet revolution. And people, by the way, who you would not have thought would be criticizing the ANC in public, like famous people, celebrities, people who've taken paychecks from the ANC, telling you. Henny Fenter, I thought this was interesting, watched an interview with Dennis Davies and Andre De Reiter, who's the CEO of Eskom at the moment. He said it was frightening. He said, in a nutshell, big criminal syndicates operating within Eskom. You plug one source of fraud and theft, and then another one appears. Eskom stopped the diesel theft and then discovered 1.1 billion rand theft of stock at one power station. Coal deliveries, having metal and rocks added to the loads to dilute the good coal as they're paid by weight, that damages the power stations. They employed top forensic guys to start sorting this out. His house was shot at when he resigned. Their hands are tied. Cops released those arrested the next day on orders from senior cops. De Reiter said he cannot fix Eskom alone. Unless the authorities and the NPA actually take this on, we're going nowhere. No individual would want to put their families at risk by taking on syndicates. Load shedding is here for a long time to come. At least it makes sense what's happening now. Please share. So I thought that was interesting. There isn't really a way out of this except to stop using Eskom. And I know that sounds ridiculous, and it sounds like something we don't want to hear, because it means we have to spend money like we do on private education, on private healthcare, on, you know, shops that that we might not want to spend so much money with because they're the most convenient. We maybe have to start supporting the little guy. You've got to just decide where your money goes. That's your greatest power in this country, even if you don't have a lot of it. And I'm feeling like right now, we don't need to reward these criminals. Let them feel it in the pocket. You can go ahead and rape Eskom. Fuck it up. Destroy it. For all you like, I'm not going to help you get there. All right. Tracy says they did the opposite of what I suggested just now. They moved from an estate to a regular street. Great neighborhood, great neighbors, no AGMs or HOA, pretty safe with great neighborhood watch. It was a good move for us. Well, well done to you. I mean, if that works, and you, I don't know where you live. I think you're in the Cape somewhere. It's better to do that in the Western Cape than anywhere else in the country. And then Michael says, put your money on your money for rates and taxes and ESCOM in a trust, and they only get the money when they meet certain fulfillment of the work that needs to be done. Well, someone suggested that Alta could do that because it would need coordination. And again, I would suggest what little money you have, you support in institutions like Alta, who are doing the best they can to fight corruption and to fight this kind of stupidity. The one thing I do know is South Africans are resilient and will unfortunately adopt without complaint unless we change the status quo. Now, I don't know about you. My power just, I think it just came on. Let me just see if I could switch this thing on. And then I'll know for sure that it's working. Aren't we lucky? We have, ladies and gentlemen, I'm lucky enough to have power for the duration of the show. Well, I'm holding thumbs. You never know, right? So are we actually in stage six now, or are we in stage four? Because I don't get those updates that a lot of people get. I'm not on one of those apps either. I just, it's always a surprise to me. And what am I going to do? Unless it's the show where I have this inverter, what happens, happens. Ruth says, the one thing I do know is South Africans are resilient and will unfortunately adapt without complaint unless we change the status quo. Yeah, we'll adapt, but don't misunderstand that this is something that pisses a lot of people off. So I put up two things yesterday, just speaking of pissing people off. And this is the one place that social media is still helpful, right? So I put up these two things. First of all, there was an article on Substack by a guy called Jordan Schachtel who says, this is the headline, snake oil, the most vaxxed country in Europe now has the worst COVID outcomes. Virtually every single adult in Portugal has taken at least two doses of the COVID vaccine, with the vast majority boosted as well. Yet this month, the most vaxxed country in Europe has consistently reported its worst outcomes. There's something that you don't get to read in the mainstream media, and you've got to ask yourself why. So go and read it. I mean, I'm not going to do the hard work for you in this respect, but that headline should tell you what you need to know. This from Alex Berenson. Don't read this if you're vaccinated. A powerful new paper in Science magazine suggests the vaccines are useless, if not harmful, against Omicron. mRNA COVID vaccines offer essentially no defense against Omicron only months after a booster shot, according to a major new study from British researchers. Both antibody and T-cell protection are nearly non-existent, the scientists found. In an even more worrisome development, when vaccinated but previously uninfected people suffer through breakthrough Omicron infections, their T-cell immunity drops. Now, these are just two headlines that I found yesterday because I decided to get back on the internet and look at something which we haven't spoken about for ages. And lo and behold, what do I find? I find a number of very well-researched, very well-put-together articles by people who have credibility that these things, these vaccines, not only help, but in some cases may have hindered our progress during this coronavirus. Now, I know we're all sick of talking about it, but surely this should make those people who were calling other people anti-vaxxers for the longest time pause and reflect. Just saying, like, even if you hate the anti-vaxxers, even if you think that they're a bunch of raving lunatics, even if you were embarrassed yourself to be called an anti-vaxxer or to be associated with anti-vaxxers, or you were one of the people criticizing them on social media, maybe a little humility is a good idea right now. That's all I'm saying. And if you were a complete vaccine fan and you haven't, and you're just ignoring and avoiding these articles, are you any better than the anti-vaxxers that you hate so much, that you were saying should be ignored and banned and sued for misinformation and disinformation? I think at this point, a lot of people are asking that question, and they have every right to do. As Tanya says, as bad as Big Pharma. Well, I think that would be a very interesting discussion to have, and at some point, we're going to have it. Ongopotse says, okay, I just got power back, but going at 10 for 4 hours. Now I probably need to work from the office. Yeah. This may be the thing that forces some people to go to the office. The other day, when we had the 4 hours on Tuesday in the afternoon here, I decided, screw that, I was going to go to gym, which I may do today again if the power goes off at some point during the day. That's the way to do it. So I'll plan my life around that and go to the gym. I think it might just be the best way to spend that time. All right, we want to hear from you. Drop us a comment. And I really would like to hear what you have to say about just these two or three things that we brought up this morning. Like, where do you live that's safe? How do you prepare yourself for that? How do you get off the grid, even if you don't have a lot of money? How do you start that process? What do you do with the time that you have today to load shed or during load shedding? You may find a productive way to use that time. And what do you think we can do to punish government and to punish ESCOM? Also, the vaccines. I mean, maybe you have something to say about that. I'd love to hear about this. Because Rysebeck says, Gareth, we really should have listened to you from the beginning. I was not an anti-vaxxer. I had the vaccine. I had two shots of the Pfizer last year. I wish I didn't. Really, I have serious regret about it. If I could go back in time, I would not have got the vaccine. Not because I suffered any health consequences because of it. I feel like I'm just as healthy now as I was a year ago or 2 years ago. COVID had very little impact on my life. And if I did have it, and I did test positive for it in what, April of this year, it was annoying. It was an irritation. But these days, I mean, who hasn't got COVID? Everybody's had it at least once. And if you haven't, somehow, it's not because you got the vaccine or you had a mask or you sanitized. None of that stuff. Dr. Fauci got it like twice. And he was the main proponent for all that bullshit. So I'm just saying, look at the results, especially now that we have a comprehensive look at it. Look at those test figures, because I think a lot of South Africans are testing at the moment and they're just not reporting it anymore. Nobody cares anymore, right? It's wild. and everybody's just carrying on like, oh, this is normal. We used to have the death toll. Do you remember? And the infection rate on the screen the whole goddamn time. Every day, in and out, on every major news network, they were showing us infection statistics, death statistics. These people have also lied to you the whole way through this thing. Now we can see it with perspective. It took us a whole 2.5 years to realize how badly we were being bullshitted. So just from now on, you know who to trust, right? Come here for opinions that matter. Listen to the people that we've spoken to over the course of the last year, not to these fucking morons and ingrates that were advising the government, not to the World Health Organization, not to the experts who, frankly, called everything they did. They got it wrong on every single front. I mean, it has to be embarrassing. If you're that wrong all the time, you're just an idiot. There should be a price they pay, and maybe there will be. Maybe we can sue them in a class action. A lot of people are saying that. That's where we get the money. So we sue these guys in our class action. We completely drive them into poverty, and we use the money that we get from them to get off the grid. Let's do that. Oh, man. 9 out of 10, I don't know if this is true. Again, I always have to say this just in case. 9 out of 10 COVID deaths are now the vaccinated and boosted people. So when are we going to have that admission and apology? Yes, that would be good. South African scientists reported this months ago, most people who get the corona in Gauteng were vaccinated. Yep, that's all happening. And you know what? This show would have been banned and taken off YouTube if we'd said that a year ago. Ask yourself why. Why would saying that, which turns out to be true, have got you banned from YouTube? Conga Chris says, yesterday I had a total of 8 hours of load shedding. That is a third of the day. Why should I pay? And is ESCOM going to compensate me for my perishables? I think all 60 million of us should sue. There's another reason to sue. Absolutely. Boiled Prawn Shack says, I've never tested for COVID. Did have an antibodies test. Showed strong lines. Nurse said I definitely had it. And I drink, I smoke, and I'm overweight. Asymptomatic, baby. Good for you. All right, very good. You know, the other thing that we should really sue, I'm not a smoker, but we should sue Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, because she was the one who said that the tobacco companies need to stop business entirely. They banned cigarettes, remember? People were buying those terrible ones from Zimbabwe. And the I think it was the North Gauteng High Court or the Supreme Court of Appeal actually dismissed her, chastised her, and awarded costs to the tobacco companies, who eventually had the balls to sue her. I do remember speaking to a lot of the liquor companies and the tobacco companies. The tobacco guys had some balls at the beginning of all of this in 2020. But the liquor companies were all shit scared. They were a bunch of complete pussies. You will remember I spoke to a few of the CEOs or marketing people on air. But they were all like, oh, no, we don't want to come on your show and say anything in case the government gets more cross with us. How did that work out for you guys? You know, bunch of real, spineless, craven, pathetic people who run companies in corporate South Africa. By and large, just going along with whatever people tell them to do. Just, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, sir. How did that work out for you guys? I want to go back to the comments section. There's some interesting things coming through here. It's one thing to get off the grid with electricity, but the water supply is being hit by these idiots. Oh, yeah, that's next. So start preparing if you can for that too. I don't know how. We've got to start talking about it. Maybe we get some experts on the show. They can advise us of what you can do. Maybe collecting rainwater. I mean, this summer we had enough rain to fill up, you know, 1,000 tanks each. But where do you put them if you don't have space? How do you collect the water? How do you filter the water? There are a bunch of questions we need answered. So maybe that's something we need to plan for a show going forward. We got a couple of news headlines I want to get to before Ben joins us, because then we can talk about the things Ben wants to talk about and that he wants to bring in on the show. So Cameron Diaz is to unretire from acting in a new Jamie Foxx film. I didn't even realize Cameron Diaz had retired. Did you? I had no idea. I hate to say, I'm sorry, Cameron, I didn't know that you'd retired. Anyway, she's to come out of acting retirement to be in a new, suitably titled back-in-action movie with Jamie Foxx. It comes 8 years after the pair appeared together in what became Diaz's last film, a 2014 remake of Annie, in which she played Miss Hannigan. Diaz, who's 49, said she was so anxious but excited about returning. During the same phone call, Foxx, who won an Oscar in 2004 for his portrayal of Ray Charles, connected Diaz with the Super Bowl-winning Tom Brady in order to offer some advice about launching a big-time comeback. I don't even know why she retired, but apparently her final movie was Annie, and she formally confirmed her retirement, had previously indicated she was taking a step back. Speaking at an event run by her friend Gwyneth Paltrow at the time, Diaz said, I just went, I can't really say who I am to myself, which is a hard thing to face up to. I felt I needed to make myself whole. She went on this whole self-healing journey, ostensibly. And this is why we haven't seen Cameron Diaz in a while. Just in case you were missing her, I have to tell you, I didn't miss her. Didn't even know she was gone. But there it is, in case you wanted to know. Cameron Diaz, she's making a brave, bold move back into movies. Unbelievable. So everybody's investigating this Enyo Benny Tavern, right? And they're desperately trying to find someone to blame for all of this. Pumi indicated yesterday on the Burning Platform, we'd love to find someone to blame and we'd love to find a savior. And the Enyo Benny Tavern, I mean, whoever owns this place, they had the right licensing, liquor licensing. Clearly they had a very successful business going. But they are going to take a fall here. And not just them, but hopefully some of the authorities in the area too, because these kids were killed. We still don't know what they died from. But apparently now they're going after the tavern owner because they say that it may have been illegally built. The double-story building could be knocked down because plans for its construction were never submitted or approved. Well, surprise, surprise. But in the average municipality in South Africa, you don't really... I mean, who's following these rules? Especially in a township. Who's following the rules? Who do you even submit these rules to? Who do you talk to about this stuff? Why would people comply? Government. Why would people fill in forms and submit plans. Why bother? If the government is just going to, it just seems like a money-making racket to most of us. I wonder how many other people in this country have illegal things built in their back garden. And frankly, who cares? They take the risk. It's their back garden. It's them that'll be hurt if the place falls down. I don't see why you have to check these things in with government. I think it's complete nonsense. In a country where none of that stuff works, why bother complying? It is 27 minutes to 7 in the morning. It's time for Ben to join us. Hey, Ben, how's it going?
Hey, Gareth. Great.
Have you got...
That's a very fetching outfit you got going there.
I found the worst thing. I'm going to wear the worst outfits I can find in my cupboard over the next few weeks on a Friday. I've decided. Bugger it.
I like it.
Yeah, well...
I like it. Good.
You know, I bought this, someone sent me this website address, and I actually bought everyone in the family one of these hoodies. They're the shittiest, they're made of like, this is probably flammable as fuck, right? And
definitely.
Yeah, I bought my dad, my brother, my sister's boyfriend, all of these hoodies, and then I bought my sister and my mom one as well. They're just shit, right? They really are like cheesy and ridiculous. And they look terrible. They keep you very warm in winter, though. And I thought, bugger it, this morning I'm going to put on the worst outfit I can find, and it was this one. But I've got a couple of others as well, so I'll see which ones I can dig out and wear as well on a Friday. We may as well do the opposite of dressing up on a Friday. Did you have power this morning when you woke up?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
There were 2 days this week where I didn't.
Oh, wow. Lucky you.
Yeah. Stage six. Yeah, stage six debris, huh? So, yeah, but it's actually really weird because when I go on these morning walks now, obviously it's cold, so no one's walking.
Yeah.
But then there's also like this absolute stillness when there is power because there's no generators. Mm. And it's kind of cool because like all you hear now is the hum of generators. Like I go to my office and the generator kicks in all day. It's such a shit sound. Like, you know, I always used to say like the smell of marijuana smells like poverty.
Yes.
The hum of a generator just says third world here.
It does.
Wow, it's depressing.
It does. Well, all
the stuff starts to really like seep in eventually.
Someone I know is in the Congo at the moment, and they posted a picture on their social media and said, I'm in the Congo right now. There's no tar roads, but at least we have electricity 24/7. Now, when the Congo is busy mocking us, then you know you're in trouble. When the Congo is making fun of you, then you're in big, big shit, because the Congo... I mean, that's a country that really is in the third world, in the worst way.
In the absolute worst way, the history of being absolutely screwed by everyone. And now I'd like to say, well, we've got tarred roads, but you can lose small children in the roads that we have here. So I just want to get back to that last story you had in the news.
Yes.
Now, I'm no doctor, but can't you do autopsies on people when they die to find out why they die?
Yes, you can. Again, you need to actually have an honest doctor who has, you know, the ability to act without the fear of, you know, being... We've got so many criminals in this country. You know, there's so many competing interests.
Good point.
I don't know whether the state mortuary in the Eastern Cape even works. I mean, that's the worst part about this is we're dealing with... We think we're in shit in Gauteng, and we think we have it bad in the Western Cape. But if you live in the Eastern Cape, first of all, in PE, they have no water. None. The dams are dry. Second of all, their municipality hasn't been working. They haven't had a single competent person in control of the Eastern Cape for, 15 years? So nothing goes right there. And that's why they're now saying, the In Your Benny Tavern didn't submit its plans and it was an illegal structure. And you're like, submit your plans to who? You're really going to go after the owner of this tavern? Because they, like 99% of the people in the Eastern Cape, gave up on government and stopped conforming to stupid rules because nobody cares and the municipality doesn't work. I would say you want to build you want to build something in your backyard, it's your backyard, build it. And if it falls down, that's on you. Really, to go after them for this is so stupid.
Again, like I've kind of picked at the back end of the story. So did the structure fail and were they crushed?
No. They were the structure is still standing. So, they're looking for some way to blame the tavern. So
Okay. Well, cool. Because it just seems to me like if the structure didn't fall, then you can't blame the structure. So there has to be something else. Is a tavern? Is there illicit substances being passed around?
Yes.
Are they making their own mampur?
Yes.
It makes my mind want to explode that no one asks normal questions or just the logical ones.
And Ben, I've been waiting all week to ask.
This is a disaster.
I've been waiting all week to ask you this. So 20 kids or 22 kids, I'm not even sure what the final death toll is, have died. Some of them as young as 13. And the question is, like, what is a 13-year-old doing in a tavern? Of course, the tavern is responsible for letting in 13-year-olds. It's unacceptable. But where are the parents? And what kind of community are we in South Africa, if at all? Are we a community? People use that word. People say the community. But it's not a community. In a real community, even if the parents are complete derelicts, someone else in the community looks after these kids and says, no, go home. You're not allowed in the tavern. We don't have a community in this country. We have a whole bunch of people who act selfishly, do whatever they want, don't care about each other. That's not a community.
Absolutely not. No, you're spot on. It's this whole, like, you know, that spirit of Ubuntu, the whole community thing across the board from corporate down. I think also, like, lockdown was like, well, screw it. I'm on my own anyway. I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everybody does now. And I think that you can't claim to be a community just because you live in the same area and you walk past each other and wave once a morning. It doesn't make you a community. Communities pick up the slack where there's a problem. They help each other. They boost each other when things are good. You know, and if your community's three people and that's what you do, then it's a community. Your community can be 100,000 people. If you do nothing for each other, you're not a community. Stop using that word. I don't like the idea of the people.
Yeah, people
use it. I'm so sick of hearing the word being used by government, being used in the news. People abuse the word community, and they just make it's this hold-all term that people like to throw in there, especially when they're talking about poor people or people that aren't them. Whenever they're talking about someone else, it's community, right? It's bullshit. I'm sick of it. Anyway.
It is. But don't you also think that it's a sign of, like, morale at the moment?
Yeah.
Because things are not going great and haven't been for a while. And if anything, and we'll finish it off on that, if anything, community is actually what saves a country in times like this.
Well, if it's
together and go, cool, this isn't working.
Right. If it actually is a community, but not the way that people refer to it in the news.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do want to... I want to talk about some other things because we've got lots of interesting stuff to discuss today, and Gord is going to be joining us at 7. But you wanted to talk about the state of music in the world at the moment, because this is a really interesting thing that's happened. I mean, music used to be this multi-billion dollar thing, but it was all controlled by the record companies. And to be a successful artist, you needed a record deal. And that's obviously not the case anymore. And the music business has changed so much. And the successful people of today, very, very different to the successful artists of maybe, you know, 20 years, 30 years ago.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing because there's obviously the different components. For us, it's we're the consumers of music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what's the most important thing for us. Like we can talk about artists and how their lives have changed and also how songs have changed as a result of society.
Right.
But I find it so interesting that we're in such a great time for music in that in the beginning, it was something very physical. Like it was a vinyl, it was a CD, it was a tape.
Right.
And there were so many different sort of functions around how you got music because you would have to go to stores, which meant that you were physically going somewhere to find something, to listen to something. And if you liked it, then you bought it. Can you imagine, like, think about it now, how much time that took. That if you were to go buy a CD, that was maybe 2 hours, 3 hours of your life.
Yeah.
Now it is 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like we always take things for granted because everything works on our phones and we just carry on with our lives and then we put food in our mouths.
Right.
But it's such a weird thing to think that not like in our lifetimes, Garrett, I mean, we're not the oldest people. In our lifetimes, that used to happen. And now the interesting thing is that because we're so saturated with convenience, it's kind of weird that vinyl sales are actually picking up again. People are actually wanting to go back to it. Now, we've seen blips of this in the last 10 years.
Yep.
But even now, people are still craving this kind of stuff. So you have all these different things as a consumer, and there's different ways of collating your music choices. But people are still buying the physical stuff.
Well, I mean, let's just look at a couple of these charts because these are interesting. New music has played second fiddle to catalog titles in total album consumption in the U.S. This is amazing. I find this fascinating because it shows you that, you know, and I'm careful to do this because I like music from all kinds of genres and generations. I like music from every decade. There are at least a few songs from every decade that I like, and I'm not one of those people who goes around going, oh, well, you know, the old music was better than the new music. But you have to admit, like, great old artists from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when you hear that music, it is just superior to a lot of the stuff that you're hearing today. And today there's so much stuff that's repetitive and that they've actually stolen from, sampled from, older music. So to prove the point, 2019, 2020, 2021, these are the stats for those years, you can see that black bar shows that the catalog stuff, meaning music that is 18 months old or older at the time, seems to be getting way more attention than current music, which is less than 18 months old in each of those years. So people are buying more old music than they are new music, which is fascinating.
Yeah, I would love to see that catalog music at 5 years plus, because I think they're being a bit like kind by saying 18 months old.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we've had this conversation over the years so many different times how, you know, there is the possibility that all the greatest songs have already been written because there's only so much you can do with music.
Yep.
But if you look at, like, music's an art, right? It's an art form.
Yes.
So if you look at it, it reflects society. Nowadays, and we've seen it with movies already, and you see what Disney is doing and dying and how they go about their content.
Mm-hmm.
People live different lives nowadays. Expression is so much more limited and so shitty and so basic. Like Justin Bieber can write a song about food.
Yeah.
And it's shit. Well, he doesn't write it. Someone gives it to him and he performs it with a hugely talented production crew that make it look appealing. Yeah. But it's a shit song. I mean, you'll forget about it. Beyonce was just moaning about whatever goes into her head. But you'll find songs where people talked about actual love, how...
Oh, yeah.
But you know, people spoke about their actual stories where they were pioneering social individuals. And it was like stories of love. People don't do love anymore because they're too scared to fall in love or they're too scared to be vulnerable. Well, or they're just completely consumed in their own noise to care about other people.
I don't want to get...
It reflects in the music.
I don't want to get lost in nostalgia, but I agree with you on music and I agree with you in respect to movies as well. I mean, I watched a movie with Katharine Hepburn and Peter O'Toole from the 1970s called The Lion in the Winter. And the dialogue was just so goddamn good. The dialogue was phenomenal. I felt like I was watching... A well-crafted story where they weren't just relying on special effects and really stupid, really, you know, predictable, dumb plot lines. It was beautifully put together. I feel the same thing's true for music. Album buyers keep it old school. This is what you were talking about earlier. This is another thing from Statista. The data here is MRC, Nielsen, and Billboard. So this is legit. And what they're looking at here is that LPs since 2019 are starting to pick up at a very, very fast pace. Obviously, CDs have disappeared, but they started to level out around just under 50 million sales a year, which is pretty damned amazing. And then digital has actually taken a dive. Digital reached its peak somewhere around 2013, 2015. It started hitting the skids. And now digital's at 26.2 million. As opposed to vinyl and CD sales, which are in the 40 millions. This is for 2021. That's a phenomenal number.
I find that so interesting. Of course, that's the stat around the US. So across the world, it might be different than what's happening in Europe. But yeah, it's music's one of those really, really fascinating things, how there is just so much to love about it. And there's so many aspects of it and how we consume it, how we enjoy it. And we all know that, like, when you get older, people get tired of hearing old people say things. People always say the same thing once they get older and have experiences, right?
Yeah.
Which means that there's some absolute truths in that. There's nothing better than hearing a great vinyl record if you've got the resources to have that set up. It is. It's a special thing. And the act of it. Because music should be something that we should have more tangible sort of connections around. And having that thing going around on that needle. Like I DJed for like 6 years, so all this kind of stuff, it's very nostalgic for me. But I often still have dreams of turntables and needles on vinyl. it's so mesmerizing. It really is. It's a mesmerizing thing. And the fact that someone of huge, amazing talent is singing and contorting instruments in certain ways to create certain sounds, it's amazing. But another thing that really hits home for me music over the weekend was I went to go watch Top Gun.
Oh, yeah.
And the original sort of Top Gun score from the 80s and some of the tracks are still involved. And what it does for the moving... Yeah, it's not now. What it does for the actual moving picture... Yeah. We've always known this, like horror mm-hmm. movies are scary because of the music, not
yes,
because
correct.
Of like the dark setting and the uncles. But horrors, we're always so good at this. And the Top Gun of the weekend, wow, like the musical score on that and the Top Gun soundtrack, it's just, mm-hmm. it made everything emotional. It made everything so good.
Now, I mean, there's some new music from Lady Gaga that people are going gaga for. So there is some new music being produced that people really love. We don't always have to put new music against old, but it's amazing to see how people are going back and doing stuff that you didn't think they'd be doing. Look at this, too. This is fascinating. Paid music streaming has added 500 million users in a decade. So this is, again, from the IFPI. Worldwide users of paid music at the end of each respective year are growing and growing and growing. So in 2019, it was 341 million. 2020, it was 443. And 2021, it's 523 million people. Compare that all the way back to 2010, where only 8 million people were paying for streaming music. That's a phenomenal wow. growth story. That's a really successful growth story.
So, I mean, like, going back to actual artists, okay, so where do they make money? The record labels used to make so much money out mm-hmm. of, like, the days of vinyl and CD and all that kind of stuff. Now, this, I'll let you out in a bit.
Gee, your cat is Jesus. Really desperate for attention. That is a needy cat. If that was a girlfriend, you would have to break up with her at this point.
I know, but it's meows. She's my spirit animal, and we've been together for a very long time. So, like, artists used to make so much money. They could still make money off actual, like, selling CDs and all that kind of stuff. Obviously, touring was the big amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But the streaming sites, obviously, if you – I mean, there was another sort of stat that I shared with you that certain sites pay certain amounts of money. So you, when you think, like, okay, Katy Perry's got 500 million streams on one of her satanic songs, like, what does it actually equate to in dollar terms? So I think – Spotify pays the least, and iTunes, Apple Music pays the most. So you'll get 0.03 cents, I think, for a stream on Spotify, and you get 0.01 on Apple.
Oh, right.
So when you see the however million streams when you're on your app, they get a fraction of a cent for every single stream. It's the same thing. Like, record labels still get the most of that money unless they're independently produced people. So there is still money to be made in producing music, but it's just – there's just something so fundamentally interesting about music in the old days and why music was made
yeah.
and how much more expressive it was.
Well,
and that's why people go back to the catalog music.
And here's a comment from Parallel Parking about vinyl. Jack White's vinyl processing plant cannot keep up with the demand. He's begged the mainstream record companies to begin pressing vinyl again to help him keep up. How's that?
Wow.
That's phenomenal. Whew. A lot of people talking about the Lady Gaga stuff in the Top Gun soundtrack and loving it. Here are some other useful and interesting stats. All right, take a look at these. So this is obviously the four major formats, but there's some others in between too. 8-track, which is right in the beginning of music. Downloads, vinyl, ringtones, cassette, streaming, CD, and others. And it shows you how they've developed over the, you know, the period up to 2020. And what's clearly taking over is streaming. Streaming is what most people will use. But there's still a huge proportion of vinyl, of CD, and even of somehow cassettes. I mean, the cassettes sort of died out in the early 2000s. But there are still – I know people who still use
these. Yeah, I want to know what –
Yeah.
I would love to know what like that is so weird. Is that because they've still got Walkmans?
How do you play
a cassette?
Well, this is it. So I've got a whole lot of CDs, but I don't have any device to play them from. I mean, I have to use a PlayStation to play my CDs. So it's time to get rid of them for no other reason than that I can't play them on a normal sound system. It's almost like they're there.
But it's just amazing how
They're there to remind me of my collection.
Just how big CDs were.
Mm, yes.
Yeah, sure. And they look nice because, you know, you bought a CD because it was well packaged.
Yeah, and it had an insert that had info in it and the lyrics to the songs and
lyrics,
like the band and their biographies. Yeah, all that shit. It was very cool. So, I mean, this is amazing. The compact disc went at its height. It was probably the year 2000, somewhere around there, where they reached almost 1,000 million, is that right? 1 billion sales? And then they reached almost that level. Now they're down to 31.6 million when they last measured in the year 2020. And this is from the Recording Artists Association. Then this is also interesting. The vinyl comeback is going ahead, and that's propelling quite a lot of music sales too. Data showing 41.7 million people are buying vinyl in 2021, and now in 2022, it looks like it's on that trajectory up. It's phenomenal.
I really want to get a turntable now. I've been thinking about it for so long. I want to get a turntable. my brother still DJs, and he has a lot of vinyl because when he lived in London around 2000, like him and his mates used to do a lot of house parties, and they would just go and buy vinyl every week because that was like the house music thing as well, and that music was always pressed to vinyl. But there is just, it's just endlessly being fascinating. Music is the gift that keeps on giving. It really is.
Oh, when you find a song, too, that you love. I was at a party probably a couple of weeks ago, 5 or 6 weeks ago, and someone was playing a song, and I said to them, oh, you know where that comes from, right? It was Warren G's Regulate. That ba-ba-ba-ba-da-da.
Ba-ba-ba-da-da. Michael McDonald.
Right, exactly. So I played the original, and this guy's mind was blown. You could see his whole world was like, oh my God, I had no idea. And the original obviously is just superior in every way. I love Warren G's Regulate, but he was just like completely blindsided by this. He had no idea where it came from. And it's so cool when you discover something like that, because then it introduces you now to Michael McDonald, and before you know it, you find yourself listening to all of his albums, and it just gives you such a thrill. Oh, it's the best. It's the best.
That guy was amazing. It's like you would imagine him just driving the station wagon all day doing chores as a house husband, and then he sings, and he just transforms into this absolute superstar. Yeah, but there's another thing about like Spotify creating playlists. On my Instagram profile, I'm going to start sharing a playlist a week, and this week I shared the greatest love songs of all time.
Oh, nice.
Some of these songs are incredible. When you go into the history, look into the lyrics.
That's so nice.
And again, like how these things came together. And like songs you just forget about.
Mm.
And bands that you just forget about. Be like, oh, hang on a second, I think I know that. So if you do like playlists on Spotify, in my stories on Instagram, you'll see a thing saying playlist. And you're like Michael Bolton. What an absolute, absolute force of nature.
I know someone who loves Michael Bolton. She just, that's her like sexiest stuff in the whole world. She hears Michael Bolton and she gets excited.
Well, I mean, if you just give Michael Bolton a chance, I think everyone loves him deep down. He's basically the Gary Player of music.
Yes.
Ultimately, probably the greatest.
Can I play you something? Can I show you something quickly? It wouldn't be a Friday morning if we didn't do something on sport. And I know that a lot of people are watching tennis because Wimbledon's on and all of that stuff.
What a weekend. What a weekend.
So I have to ask your opinion on this because typical of me, I got to find something to be annoyed by. Someone sent this to me on social media. I haven't started watching sport.
It's the fucking Stormers dances again.
I know. So look at this linesman.
Oh, okay. Gosh.
Okay, so this is at Wimbledon. The colors would indicate that it's Wimbledon, purple and green. There's this enormous Jabba the Hutt of a line judge. She's poring over all four sides of the chair. She is much too fat. She's probably not going to live another week or two into Wimbledon. She won't make the finals. And yet she's got a job here as a linesman. Here she is standing up. Just so you know, I'm not being unkind.
Well, she gets up.
Yes, and she's got a gunt, which is always a marvelous thing to see. The jersey is stretched so tight that the two buttons that are holding it together have a gap in between them where you can see the shirt. Under.
Shout out to those buttons. They got the most to do.
Shout out to the manufacturer of this clothing. I don't think they thought they would be making clothing for someone this enormous. And then the pants are sort of around the middle of the gunt, which reaches obviously all the way down in a large flap to between the upper thighs. It's just appalling to me. Next to her, next to this monstrosity of a fat, obese, unathletic person at an athletic event, is a much more attractive girl, just by way of comparison. If you put the two together, it is very clear which one of those is healthier and a better representative of humanity. And I think in sport, that's the one place it's always been okay for us to be a little bit judgy and to try and find the best specimens and to try and find the people who look the best. And that's a bald girl in the background who looks great, and in the front, the line judge who looks appalling. And I just think this is not a great ad for Wimbledon. Wimbledon should not hire fat people. It's really not good. You can hire fat people in a corporate office. You can hire fat people in various other places. I'm not going to concession stands. I'm not going to discriminate. In fact, I want chefs and people who work in restaurants to be fat, because then you know they love the food there as much as anyone else. But in certain places, can we please just try to avoid being unnecessarily inclusive and diverse? Because it's not a good look. This does not warm me up to Wimbledon, and I'm sure it doesn't impress a lot of other people too. You know, let's just be honest about this. Sorry.
No, but what a weekend of sport, Gareth. For the first time since 2019, the Springboks get to play in front of home supporters.
At Loftus.
So I'm going to be at Loftus.
Yeah.
Loftus Pavilion.
Yes.
Loftus. Loftus Pavilion with 50,000 drunk people shouting and screaming with such happiness. Like, and absolutely nothing is going to hold us back. No stupid Cyril bullshit. No load shedding. We are going to be South Africans for at least 80 minutes.
That's very nice.
So incredible.
I know lots of people who are going.
I'm going to try to get through today and get there.
Apparently, tickets are like hen's teeth. You can't get them, so it's going to be a nice big crowd.
Well, it's sold out, yeah.
No masks, no...
50,000.
No stupid rules around social distancing. We're back to being normal, and a good thing it is. And I think this is terrific, even though you know I won't be watching because I don't care. But you have fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just a strange thing to kind of like limit yourself from. But yeah, I'm going to smell boerewors in the open air. I'm going to see huge men in far too short shorts. I don't even have the words, Gareth. I don't even have the words. We're going to take the car train, get onto a bus. When we get there, get into Loftus. We're going to hear bad Afrikaans music.
Excellent.
It's going to be like another time. It's going to be like a portal to another world, which used to
be our
world. And I'm so damn excited about that. And then 2 a.m. Sunday morning, Dricus du Plessis is fighting in the UFC again.
Nice.
Oh, what a weekend. This is about as happy as I can possibly be.
Superb. Well, we've got a lot coming to you in the next hour. Among other things, Gord Laws will be joining us. He is going to be joining us from some unknown, undisclosed location in Europe somewhere. I think he's still in the UK, but we'll speak to him, find out about his trip to Manchester. He went to see Old Trafford. And he wants to tell us not only about Old Trafford, which is obviously a bit of a pilgrimage for Gord, being a Man United supporter, but he wants to also tell us about the city of Manchester itself, which he says is shitty beyond belief. So I'm always excited to find out about a place that's either fantastic or shitty. And this morning we might get a little bit of both from Gordo. Stick around. There's a whole lot more coming. It is 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com. Good morning. CliffCentral.com.